And we are back on the Generations Radio broadcast. Today, friends, young entrepreneurs, some exciting stories of young men who are not sitting in their parents' basement playing video games while Rome burns, but they're actually out there taking dominion and seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness and trying to determine what that means. And that's a vision that young men need to really get their hands around. And that's why we're doing this series of interviews on this edition of the Generations broadcast. Today we have with us Matthew and Makea Thomas, who've been working in the area of hotel management, and they've got their own investment company called LaMarche Investment. Welcome to the program, men.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here.
What a great concept to launch off into the entrepreneurial world. And now, did you intend to do this early on when you were getting ready to graduate from your homeschool?
No, not really.
Okay.
This business, it was something where we, especially maybe if you rewound our lives 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we really, I know predominantly for me, we really didn't know what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Sitting on, you know, we tried a little bit of college. We realized that we really didn't want to go down that route, spending all the time and money on something that we weren't even sure that we would use in life. So we wanted to be a little bit more purposeful. And so we had an opportunity come up. My dad sought out some godly men that we could apprentice under and mentor under. And an opportunity came up with a gentleman in St. Louis who basically owns apartments, runs a business very successfully. And he asked him, hey, can our sons, it was going to be just me. He asked if we could basically intern and apprentice under him for a short time. And he agreed to it. So we got started and tried that out. And at first we weren't even sure we were going to do it long term, but it ended up, you know, 4 weeks turned into 3 months and 3 months turned into a year. And that's how we got started.
Do you think the mentorship is essential, fellas, when it comes to this business? I mean, could you have done it without the mentorship?
No, definitely not. I mean, just the wisdom, having that wisdom and proper guidance is extremely essential. Otherwise, I know that we would be floundering in a whole new world that we didn't even, you know about before we got started.
Mm-hmm. Now, Matthew, you're 22, and Micaiah, you're 19. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
And you're doing your own business in the St. Louis area. Do you mind telling us what you're doing?
Sure, definitely. What we are doing is basically apartment. It's more apartment ownership and management.
Okay.
We started just working and saving up our money so that we could launch out and buy some property ourselves, basically renting out. Our goal is to rent out the best quality apartment we can to people in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's apartment, basically renting out apartments to people.
Wow. Now, it's kind of a dog-eat-dog business, isn't it? I mean, it's not easy. You've got clientele. You've got people who don't always pay their rent. You've got things that go bad. You have to fix things. I mean, how involved are you in all this?
Very involved. Basically, yeah, it's a we're in charge of every aspect of the management process. So everything in terms of getting the apartments ready, which means going in there, fixing up a apartment that somebody trashed or anything along those lines, updating it, adding new doors, appliances, whatever we think would be necessary to make the unit pop and have somebody want to rent the place out.
Mm-hmm.
We make sure that every unit we go into, that if we would not live in that unit ourselves, we make sure that we renovate it to the spot where, you know, we would be happy to live in that unit ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then the process of renting it out. So marketing, I'm trying to find clientele that would be a good fit for renting it out, not just somebody who doesn't have any credit history or who trashed their last place they were living at, something like that. It's definitely been a matter of we've had certain people who don't like us for sure. So it's been tough. There's been a lot of late nights working insane amounts of hours.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of trying to do every aspect of the work that we can.
I'm sure you've had some enlightening insight into human nature. You know, getting to know the way people live, the way they act, and you know, the way they've been affected by Grandpa Adam, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. That's so true. Definitely seen a lot of the world more than we've ever seen just growing up in our home.
Mm-hmm.
Been interesting, and I think it's been good for us. I mean, just kind of seeing where people are at and seeing a realistic picture of how people live in this world.
Well, there are people without integrity, but that doesn't mean that you should be without integrity. And it seems to me that God is forming your character in this work. Is this what you're finding?
Mm-hmm. I think that is also, you know, one of the reasons that mentorship is so essential, in that just we are always able to go back to our mentor and ask him, you know, what is the proper way to deal with these people?
Yeah.
You know, should we come down with a strong fist, or, you know, should we be more lenient, or, you know, what exactly is going on behind the issues that we're dealing with?
You guys are talking about the fact that you're working some insane hours. And, of course, any entrepreneur pretty much figures that out. You know, you got to throw yourself into it if you're going to make this thing work. And you're learning that lesson. What has happened in terms of development of your character? I mean, when you started out a couple, 2-3 years ago, were you ready? Was your character formed to jump into this?
I would say that it wasn't to the degree that we would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have definitely, you know, formed and shaped. And I can see it in my brother how he's been formed and shaped since day one till now, that you can see a great difference looking at it. But I mean, it's a good comparison to war. You know, the war never stops, and though you're tired or you don't feel like working, the battle is still there, and you have to keep pressing on to it whether you feel like working or not.
Have you made any mistakes? I mean, looking back, have you learned some things from some of the mistakes that you've made?
Mm-hmm. Man, unceasingly, we make mistakes all the time. It's one of those things you're trying to realize, well, what went wrong, and how do we remedy it, so as to not make the same mistake in the future, and just striving on towards trying to perfect ourselves.
What are some of the secrets to success you've determined in apartment ownership and management to this point? I mean, is there something you can share, some tricks of the trade that you've picked up on?
I would almost say that just being honest, treating your clients, a lot of apartment landlords, their mindset is that, you know, the people they're renting to are below them, instead of viewing them as clients and saying, hey, this person's here to rent, you know, they want our product and we want to deliver the best product we can to them.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to have that mindset and try to rent out a fair product to people. And really just taking dominion, in the sense that if you come across a property, I think there's a proverb where it says, where there's laziness, the building creaks, because of some sort of laziness, the house leaks. So basically saying that when you come across a property, you want to fix it up, you want to make it better, and doing that improves everything, you get better clientele, your building property value goes up, and a lot of your problems disappear when you do that. So just being honest and striving to have a good product for people.
Gentlemen, what are your goals? Maybe, you know, in terms of specific goals or general goals, what do you want to get out of this?
It's funny, when we started, we wrote down some general things that we've gone back to. One of the things that we wrote down that we determined is that, well, first of all, we want to start a business that we can provide for our families, so that down the road, you know, we can get married, get established, have some way of providing for our families financially. That was one thing that we wrote down. The other thing was obviously to have provide for people, you know, put a roof over people's heads, give people the best apartment they can in town, and try to give them a good product that they enjoy. Also, some of the other things that we were looking at was just being able to help down the road. One thing we really both want to do is we've been mentored by a man who's taking time and poured into our lives, and we've seen the benefit of that. And what we really want to do is, over the years, figure out ways where we can do the same thing with other young men, is encourage them to start their own businesses, encourage them to get up, you know, and start pursuing a direction, a path in life, where they can – provide for their families and not just be lazy, you know, get up and work.
How do you deal with motivation? On the one hand, you know, you want to get out there, make a buck, be successful in the marketplace. On the other hand, as Christians, you know, you're to seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness first. You know, there's these differing motivations that I think are constantly in competition in the mind of the successful Christian businessman. How do you work that out for yourselves?
You know, honestly, it's still an ongoing working process. And there's, you know, many things that we are still struggling with. One of them, for instance, is just, you know, us as bachelors being in our bachelor pad here by ourselves, is one thing that we struggled with is just having that kind of family worship every night.
Yeah.
And, you know, just continuing on with that and having that, you know, as an opening or closing at the end of the day to help us keep that our focus is, you know, something we're still struggling to, you know, have every night.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're still trying to figure that one out. I don't know. What do you think? What would your suggestion be?
Well, I would tell you that that you got to get back to the essential issues, and that is the building of the Church of Christ, the building of family relationships, the opening up of your own home to hospitality, the commitment, your commitment to bringing God's law to bear in your area of work, even if you might have to sacrifice some money or some investment for the time being in order to maintain your integrity and bring God's law to bear in the marketplace. You see, you've got to keep the kingdom first and foremost at all these different levels and trust that God is going to reward you for the work that you do. One of the things I told the guys this morning in the Shepherd Center was that God always writes the paychecks. Whether you're an entrepreneur or in the corporate world, you have to believe that God writes the paycheck. I was successful in the corporate world for a number of years. I was promoted to management and reported to a president for a $200 million company for a time. And I really wasn't as concerned about pleasing my immediate boss, my clients, et cetera, as I was to please God. And my relationship with God in that work was vital and incredibly important, and I needed to put his law and his righteousness first over even the demands of the company. And sometimes the company wanted, you know, me to sort of, you know, lie a little bit on the contracts or lie a little bit and be a little deceitful to the clients and such, and I wouldn't do it. But I was always willing to put my job on the line for the cause of my integrity and my relationship with God. And I always reminded myself that God writes the paychecks. And yeah, I know sometimes it's the corporate world that issues them, and sometimes it's your clients that provide you the remuneration for your service or product. But whatever the case, you still have to remember that it is God that signs those checks. And if you keep that in mind, you're going to go out there in the marketplace and work as hard as you possibly can, always remembering that God writes the paychecks. And if you remember that God is sovereign in that way, sometimes the money comes from unusual sources. Sometimes, you know, you'll achieve success in an area that you didn't expect the success. But you just have to trust that God is in control of these things and you work for him.
Mm-hmm. That is so true, and it's very encouraging to hear you say so. Just an example in our lives, Makai and I, we over the past couple months, there was a time where we kind of fell out from just doing family worship, reading our Bibles at night. We try to be very purposeful in terms of like reading our Bibles in the morning, but there's a time where, you know, the business got a lot of stuff came up on our plates, and we had to, you know, just work a lot and fell out of that practice. And looking back, we realize just how bad that is, how the mindset is. It's so easy being in the world to get caught up in the world's mindset, you know, just trying to live it out and do it yourself. But really, I mean, the verse, you know, what is the profit if we gain the world and lose our soul? It's pointless. You know, so just having that, it's so encouraging to hear people. And that's why the word, just being in the word is encouraging too, reminding us that, hey, this is what we're living for. Not the business, but it's definitely something that we try to hang around godly men. We try to, you know, hang with people who can encourage us in that way.
Well, and that will be the secret to your success, both spiritually and economically and financially, as you launch out in this entrepreneurial endeavor. And we appreciate what you're doing. As you look out towards the future and as you're working through the day-to-day problems in your hotel management with the investments that you've already purchased, Let me ask you this. What's your outlook? I mean, you sound optimistic to me. It's not hopeful. But what is your expectation?
I'm not sure about that. Could you rephrase that question maybe in another light?
Yeah. I mean, do you think you're going to fail? Do you think you're going to succeed? Do you have expectations of success in mm-hmm. your endeavor?
We certainly hope so. We're kind of just putting our nose to the grindstone and trying our best. One of the things that I'm striving to do and have in my mind is just kind of thinking about the parable of the talents. You know, we're given talents by God, and our goal and purpose for that is to strive to be faithful with it, to make more talents and use it for the kingdom of Christ. So it's one of the things where, you know, we're going to try our best to do as much as we can, and the rest is in God's hands.
That's a very good way to put it. You have to be very, very faithful with small things, with what God has given you. Some people get way far ahead, and they get into debt by adding more and more investment properties before they've proven themselves in the one or two investment properties that they've managed to purchase. And each one of those properties is really a talent that God has given to you, and you need to do the best job you can to make it profitable and to be faithful in small things. If you're faithful in small things, God gives you better things. It's the debtor mindset and the person who wants to get rich quick that runs out there and grabs as many investments as possible and then eventually runs it all into the ground because he had more of the hare mentality than the tortoise mentality, if you know what I'm saying.
Right, exactly. Right. That's very true. If you don't mind, I'd love to ask you a question. One thing we've been talking a lot about is trying to figure out one thing we see in the Christian community that we run in is that a lot of the young men, they have the mindset of not getting out there and working, that they're kind of so tied to their family that in the sense that they don't actually go out and strive to start businesses, go out there and work. Why do you think that is? We're trying to figure out, you know, what are the reasons behind that, and what are some ways that we can, with a biblical worldview, strive to overcome that. But what do you think the reasons behind that?
I think the biggest problem is the average young man, whether he's homeschooled or public schooled, same problem exists everywhere. He has not been mentored by men. He's been mentored by women and by his own mother, and he doesn't know how to be a man. A man needs to know how to get out there and cut a piece of the rock out for himself. He needs to be a man of faith and courage, willing to take those risks. And most young men aren't willing to do that because they've been raised by women.
Mm-hmm.
Or they haven't been raised by anybody at all. So I think that's the big problem. They just don't have the courage to go out and do something. And, of course, there's the typical sins of slothfulness. I think probably 97.8% of young men suffer from the sin of slothfulness. And, you know, unless somebody's come side by side with him and worked with that year in and year out and pointed out where he's been distracted, where he hasn't been meticulous and careful and conscientious in his diligence, where he is unwilling to go up against the difficult trials and really throw himself up against the lion in the streets and pull out his .45 and blow the brains of the lion out so he can go plow his fields. He hasn't learned some of these basic issues in the area of diligence, and I think he needs to be mentored in much of that. And typically, somebody who's learned how to work eventually enjoys work and couldn't think of himself doing anything else.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Yeah. If I could even just throw out there an encouragement to any other young men, two years ago before we started this business, I was at a point where in life I was quite honestly, very depressed where I was in life. Didn't know what I wanted to do. Didn't know where to go. I spent a lot of time just seeking God's will. It seems like a lot of men, they don't have three things. They don't have money, they don't have experience, and they don't know where they want to go. And that's where we were both at, 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest encouragements I would say is, well, seek God, take time to really pray, maybe fast, and, ask God, where do you want me? But then also seeking out godly counsel and mentorship. A lot of times, you don't know what you want to do until you do it. You just have to do it and try it. And once you try it, you might not like it for a little bit because, you're unfamiliar with it. But once you try it, you kind of start realizing what different areas you might like to do.
Yeah. You have no idea where you belong in the pool until you've actually dove into the pool and swam around, gotten used to the water. So, yeah, I encourage people to to get involved, get out there. And they should be doing it at 16, 17, 18 years of age. They don't should not wait until they're 22 or 23. They should not wait until they've achieved a college degree that may or may not apply to their future. They should just jump out into the waters and hopefully get the experience and the mentorship necessary to start, you know, figuring out the calling that God has in their life. So good stuff. Appreciate the inputs today, folks. I mean, you guys are doing what probably 99% of young people are not doing. But don't get the idea that everything's going to be hunky-dory real soon. You know, depend on God, trust in Him, and continue to submit yourself to good counsel, because that's critical for success out there. And I just want to wish you the best, and we'll be praying for you. Matthew and Micaiah Thomas, young entrepreneurs, part of LaMarche Investments out in St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Mr. Swanson.
And we'll be back in just a moment.
Every year, Generations with Vision sponsors a family economics conference somewhere in America. This year, we are sponsoring two conferences, one in Washington State and the other in St. Louis, Missouri. For families who want to reintegrate the family into a family economic vision, for families who want to find ways to mentor their sons and daughters into the family economy, this is just the conference for you. How do you choose the optimum business streams for your family? How do you integrate your children into the family economy? What about budgets and debt and capital investments? And what about inheritance and taking care of grandpa and grandma along the way? We'll have young entrepreneur panels, mom and daughter panels, farming panels, retail and e-commerce panels, audience surveys, and some great keynote speakers, including free-range farmer Joel Salatin, entrepreneur Eric Weir, and Kevin Swanson. Join us for our four-day mega conference in St. Louis or the two-day fall conference in Olympia, Washington. Register today at FamilyEconomics.com. That's FamilyEconomics.com.
And welcome back to the Generations Broadcast. Friends, Kevin Swanson again here with you. And we're going to go to the other side of this. Previously in this program, we interviewed the Thomas brothers about what was going on with their mentorship and what they have learned and how they have merged into the macroeconomy. And today we're going to talk to the other side of this. Jim Zeese has been mentoring these young men in the St. Louis area for a couple of years now. And he is a businessman, a successful businessman, I should say, in the St. Louis, Missouri area. And now he joins me on the Generations Broadcast. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Jim, you know, this mentorship concept is important to me. The youth unemployment rate is in the double digits in this country. In nations like Spain, Greece, Italy, it's up around 50-60% of young people not working. That is 20, 24, 26-year-olds are not working in many of these economies. And many of the college students graduating today are not getting jobs in their field. I think the number is about 50% still from the last couple of years. They have huge college debts. Many of them spend $100,000. To graduate from an institution, they don't have a job, and they've got college debts, and apparently the default rates are now double, triple of what they were some 5 or 10 years ago. So, you know, right now, young people having a really difficult time, young men not getting married very soon, and I think a large part of this is that the fact they don't have jobs, and they have a lot of debt. So here we are trying to work our way out of the box on this one. Your thoughts right now. What do we do with a young man, 20, 22, 24 years of age, and you know he's got to get married? What does he do?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it starts when they're young, 8, 9 years old, start thinking about what they want to do for a living, and that's where the mom and dad step in and help them.
Uh-huh.
And the young man might have to try 5 or 10 different things to figure out what they want to do for a living to support a family. And I think if the Christian businessmen, whatever trade they're in, if they can teach some of these young men their trade, I think that is their college.
Mm-hmm.
They can be paid while they're learning on the job training. I think that's how it was done in our history past in our nation.
Yes.
And we've gotten away from that.
Yes. And I think the model is the kid just goes to school for 18 years and he plays computer games and then he goes to college and he plays more computer games and then he
right.
and then he graduates from college with $100,000 in debt and he knows how to play computer games, but he really doesn't know how to do anything else. It's not a model that works very well. We're really encouraging people to get away from that model and get, you know, internships, mentorships, work experience for their young men early on and hopefully be ready to lead a family by the time they're 24, 25 years of age. And that's, I think, the way it should be. So you've had some experience with this. You've done a little mentorship now the last couple of years. Is that true? I mean, it's been, what, 2 or 3 years?
Right. It was 2 years in February, so it's
okay.
2 years and a couple months.
Okay. Your thoughts thus far? I mean, is this a good thing?
Yes. It's been really fun watching these guys learn and grow and become experienced in business and just figuring out how much things cost, be problem solvers. That's one of the main things I try to teach them, that you're going to have all these problems in business. How can you solve the problem the fastest, most efficient way and still come out with a good product?
You know, it's interesting that college does not really prepare you for the real world. It gives you some tools, but it's one thing to get a bunch of tools. It's another thing to build a house. Does that make sense? I mean,
sure.
Somebody can give you a bunch of tools, like, you know, here's $100,000 in tools, nail guns, et cetera, et cetera. Now go build that house. That's a transition. I mean, you've got tools and that's good, but you've got to get out there and actually solve problems and produce a usable, marketable product or service. And that does not happen automatically by just a bunch of book learning.
Right. We have to learn how to think. God's given us, if we could just use our physical muscles to get things accomplished, then we wouldn't need a brain. But my father always told us, you got to use your brain, that's a muscle, and you got to use your physical muscles. It takes hand in hand. He would tell us, if it only took your physical muscles, then all ditch diggers would be millionaires.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it doesn't take much brain power.
Mm-hmm. So these guys needed to learn the business. And the business was apartment management. Is that correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Buying apartments, mm-hmm. fixing them up, and renting them out.
Right. And you've done that for a number of years.
My brother and I started in 1975.
Wow.
But that goes back even further with my father taking us, my brother and I, to work. I was 8. My brother was 7. He taught us how to paint, fix up apartments. I remember the first time he told us that we could go to work with him. It was like on a Friday night. My brother and I could hardly sleep Friday night because we were so excited about going to work with our dad, because he always made work sound like fun and exciting and problem solving.
Uh-huh. And, you know, maybe that's one of the first lessons. People have to be motivated. They have to enjoy what they're doing, and they have to find that dominion work is fulfilling work and good work and productive work, and God blesses that kind of work. And these are the lessons we have to teach our young people.
It is. If I still love getting up in the morning and going to work because it's always something different. I really enjoy it.
Mm.
And that's what our father always told my brother and I. You should do a job that you enjoy getting up, going to work. He was never on Sunday night saying, oh, it's Monday, I got to go into the office and do this or that, you know, back to the salt mines.
Mm-hmm.
It was never like that. He couldn't wait to get back to work.
Jim, how did the mentorship work? I mean, I realize there's thousands of different ways that you might mentor a young man. We've been doing mentorship here ourselves for the last 6 or 7 years, and typically it's 2 to 3 days out of the week. They come, most of the time they stay overnight with us, and we spend concerted time with these young men, and we have seen some very good results out of it. But, you know, you can do all kinds of different things. You can meet with a guy for lunch every single week for 52 weeks out of the year, and that's a good mentorship too. There's lots of different things you can do. How did it work for you?
Okay, for us, the Thomas family was not in town. They were still in, well, actually they had moved to Oklahoma.
Okay.
So their that's where their family was. So Matthew Micaiah came up to St. Louis, and really with nowhere else to go, we didn't want to just put them in an apartment by themselves at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually lived with our family for a year.
Okay.
And what they went to work for my company, and they would work 40 hours a week, which they were getting paid for that. And then in the evenings, especially the first month, after family worship, then I would go through business principles, money and capital, and how all that worked. And then as they became acclimated, those classes went down to about once a week.
Yeah.
But it was during the day constantly being with them. This is the way this tool works. This is how apartments work.
Yeah.
Riding back and forth to work with them, talking about these things and mm-hmm. just speaking into their lives so they would grasp what was going on.
What a great opportunity for them. And what a great ministry that you provided. You know, that's sacrifice on your part, Jim. And I think it's important for us to feed into the lives of others. You know, God calls us to this. And it's a good result. I mean, it's a good thing. This is something you could share with these young men, and you share your wisdom with them. That's invaluable. But to prepare them for life, I mean, I tell you, there are probably 60 million young men crying out for the opportunity for some older man to feed into their lives. This kind of thing should happen more. But is it fulfilling for you to do that, do you think?
Sure, it absolutely was. These guys say, oh, we are so blessed to be able to come and, mm-hmm. and learn these things, and they're still learning every day.
Yeah.
And I tell them, no, it's the other way around. I was really blessed. Our family was blessed just to be able to be a part of your lives. And uh-huh. and we often talk about it, how they were when they first got here and where they're at now. And
yes.
It's just exciting to see,
amazing.
To be a part of that.
Jim, were they receptive from day one? Were they pretty receptive to you?
Yes, they were. They were eager to learn.
Uh-huh.
In fact, what happened at the beginning? We had agreed just for them to come for 4 weeks, the month of February. Well, before the month was over, they were asking, "Could we come back? Could we stay longer?" And my family and I prayed about it, and we said, "Okay, you could stay until the 4th of July."
Mm-hmm.
And because their family was going up to Massachusetts, well, before it got to the 4th of July, they said, could we stay longer? We said, okay, we can stay till the first of the year. And then by that time, they just decided to stay in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's a great way
so
to do it.
It kept being extending.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yeah.
Well, we were willing to do that because
yes.
they were eager to learn.
Yes.
And they were listening to what I was telling them.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great way to do it, Jim. I'll tell you, you know, not everybody responds not well. Not everybody listens well. And, you know, you have an occasional situation where the chemistry doesn't work or the young man has basic character flaws that you just can't overcome in the mentorship. And you got to give it, you know, a month or two or 3 months. And then, this isn't working out. We're going to move on. But if they pass the first gate, then you just, you know, bring them in for another 3 to 6 months. And that's a really good way to do it. I've had some great experiences, mostly great experiences, not always the best, but I've had some great experiences, and that's typically the way that we work. Now, how did these young men launch? How do they launch? Once you've mentored them for a period of time, I know they've kind of done some of their own things now. How did that work?
Okay, after they had been here a little over a year, then I said, well, are you guys ready to actually buy some apartments?
Mm-hmm.
And they were bracing at the bit. They wanted to jump in and start doing it. It's one thing to see someone else doing it, but then when you actually have to do it, you know, it's a different ball game.
Yeah.
So we started looking, and by God's providence, we were able to find a place, and they were able to purchase it. And that's really where they've been learning a whole lot.
Yes.
I think It was a year ago in March that they bought their first place.
Do they still come back to you for counsel?
Oh, yeah. They call me all the time, and that's one thing I've tried to make myself available. If I see, I try to pick up when they call, or if I'm busy, I try to call them back right away and make sure I answer all their questions.
Yeah. How do you think they're doing now? I mean, you don't need to get into specifics here, but just generally speaking, how do you think the young men are doing once they've launched into their own business?
I think they're doing excellent. They do everything I ask them and suggest to them. Some things I leave up to their discretion, but I try to guide and counsel them, and it really does take about 3 years of mentoring someone for them to really grasp what's going on, I believe. I think that's why Jesus was with his disciples for 3 years. I think that's just what it takes. But basic answer to your questions, I'm in communication with them daily, and I just came from their apartments. I stop by there all the time.
Wow. That's great. That's great. You almost feel like this is your little project you're launching in the lives of these young men.
It is. Uh-huh. It reminds me when my brother and I first started in business, and I'm just having a whole lot of fun being a part of it.
That's great. Jim, there are tens of thousands of men, of business owners, of dads listening to the program right now. And I tell you what, you know, I really believe that God is calling men to this task, the task of mentorship, the task of discipleship, fathering. And what can you tell them right now? What would you encourage them to do?
Well, for the fathers, they need to start thinking early about their sons, about how they can train them. If they can't train them in whatever job they're doing, then they need to see where they can get their son some training. It starts early, and it's mom and dad helping guide the young men through this difficult process. It's very hard for young men to figure out what they want to do for a living, what they will really enjoy doing. And we have to give them opportunities to try a bunch of different things.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are working very, very hard to produce an out-of-the-box solution to the college milieu, the problem with the educational systems, the problem with the breakdown of the family, of fatherhood, the breakdown of young men, 70% of whom are not grown up by 30 years of age, up from 30% in 1970. And it's programs like these that are equipping tens of thousands of families across America to get out of the box and find really worthwhile solutions. I think biblically oriented solutions, that is a discipleship, mentorship, relationship-based model that launches young men into life, and that we have seen happening and happening successfully again and again and again and again in our experience. And much of this is tied to our Family Economics Conference and the mentorship programs that we recommend all the time on this radio program. And Jim Zeese, another wonderful example of how that's happened. And by the way, Jim Zeese will be at the Family Economics Conference coming up in St. Louis, Missouri in just about 4 weeks from now. So, friends, if you want to be a part of that, it's FamilyEconomics.com. Jim, we're looking forward to this conference. I'm looking forward to connecting with you at the conference, and we appreciate all the experience and all the wisdom that you have given us over the years.
Well, you're welcome. Hey, we're really looking forward to this conference, too, and getting excited about it. We can't wait for you all to get in town, and let's get going with it. Get these fathers and moms and families trained and start Amen. Thinking outside the box, like you said.
Amen. And I think what I'd like to do, Jim, is I'd like to collect a group of mentors for mentors, and we certainly want to invite you into that as well. We have a special luncheon on mentorship that we are going to sponsor at the conference. I would really, really like you to be there, and I, of course, would like hundreds of others to show up at that luncheon as well. I'm not sure if we could fit, you know, thousands into the luncheon, but we want to deal specifically with mentorship at this luncheon, and I'd like to connect with you at that time. So let's connect at the Family Economics Conference in St. Louis here in a few weeks.
Sure, I would love to do that.
All right, folks. Again, FamilyEconomics.com is the website, and you need to register right now because we're just about filled up for the conference. It's FamilyEconomics.com. If you're just on the line right now, I'd encourage you to grab this website and register today at FamilyEconomics.com. Jim Zeese, thanks again for joining us on Generations.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
And you have been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. You can interact with our program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. If you have other ideas concerning family economies, mentorships, things that have worked for your family or for some other family, just email those ideas to us at host@kevinswanson.com. Always looking for a solution. We like to light candles rather than curse the darkness, and these are programs in which we are doing just that. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation. Thank you.